All right, I've turned on recording. Welcome, folks, to the February 26th Aries Working Group call in the U.S. afternoon. This is this will be really great. Please mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. One of the reasons, by the way, for the Code of Conduct is not just to avoid really bad things, to promote a good and welcoming culture. So that people's opinions and questions are welcomed and appreciated. So it's not just about not doing horrible things, which we should also not do, but a culture of acceptance and not piling on people for not well-worded questions, et cetera. So we do a good job of that in this community, and I appreciate all of your efforts. Please add your name to the attendees list in the wiki. Any introductions? Anyone here today that hasn't been here before would like to introduce themselves?
Yeah. I'm Echo. I just joined at Evernym. Excited to be here.
Welcome. Glad you're here.
Thanks.
Hi, anyone else?
Can you hear me?
I can.
I'm Pan. I'm at Medis Venture, where Echo used to work. I'm just joining in today, and I think we met you guys last time at Provo for the meetup. Happy
yes.
to be here.
I'm really glad you're here too, because you're on the agenda for a demo, which I'm excited about.
Yep.
So very good. Anyone else? Well, fantastic, folks. Announcements. Next week is the Hyperledger Global Forum. It's there for info, but if you probably didn't plan on going, you probably won't make it. Yes, Stephen.
Never mind. I thought you weren't recording, but I see you are. So never mind. Sorry.
Thanks for keeping track of me though. I forget sometimes I do. So Hyperledger Global Forum, next week, and Richard would like to meet around a cactus. For lunch if you're going. The IAW is coming up as well at the end of April. If you haven't been to IAW before, it's fantastic. The conversations are fantastic. There's lots of learning and collaboration going on there, and I highly encourage that. I've been a frequent attender and benefiter of that. This call happened. Yeah, thanks, whoever edited that. Did that call happen? Is the recording posted anywhere?
It did happen. I'm not sure if the recording's posted, but it did happen. It was a good session with learnings about how to operate nodes, and a point or two, a really good document that covers how to manage indie nodes.
I was just looking askance at my team. I don't know if we got the recording posted. We'll look into that.
Okay. Love to be able to link that as a resource for those that will be learning. So super good. Related meetings this morning, we had the A call. Richard ran it. Richard, do you want to summarize?
It is a lot of fun to be collaborating on an open source project with smart people. I'm going to merge that call with a bit of an update on the upcoming release and work updates. Do it all at once. We spent most of the time talking about how is we've been doing rich schemas, which is our shorthand for W3C compliant verifiable credentials in Indy. We're at the point now where we need to start getting that into client libraries. So we were talking about how to get that into shared Aries libraries that we can all benefit from. We know Aries Framework Go already has an implementation of this, but we want to do something C callable that we can pull into the other libraries. So Andrew Whitehead has part of that involves splitting libindy into pieces. Andrew Whitehead has pulled out the verifiable data registry, and that library is now in GitHub, in the Hyperledger GitHub, and it's ready for broader adoption. There's still some polish that needs to happen, but BCGov is going to start using that as the basis of their deployments, and the Evernym team is committed to get libindy to use it, so that'll be good. The next step was we've been working on Aries on Indy Credex, which is to pull out the Anon Creds implementation, and an Aries Credex where it's all the broad, instead of it being the Indy specific stuff, it's all the broad encoding items related to how do you build a credential and encode it and all that kind of thing. there's two libraries to do that. The Sovereign Foundation has been working on Ares Credex, and Andrew Whitehead has been working on Indies Credex. And so those are just putting those links in. The next piece is that we still have Pack Unpack and some of these basic functions that are very generally useful. We're going to pull that into a utility library that hasn't started yet. And then Mike Lauder has been working on a rethink about what should the Ares key management architecture look like. And he's been putting that together. He'll in the next Ares Working Group A call, which is March 9th, he's going to present his proposed architecture as an RFC. So that'll be really useful there. And then the other piece of that conversation was with these different libraries, how are we going to manage things like integration testing and deployment? And we decide we're going to use GitHub Actions for CI/CD unless there's something that GitHub Actions isn't providing, in which case we'll use Hyperledger's account for Azure pipelines. That's the approach that Ares Framework Go has been taking successfully. And so we're going to adopt that for these libraries as well. That's the summary. Did I miss anything?
No, that was super good. And better job than I could do. So appreciate that. Perfect. The other call I'll mention is the DiffDidCom working group. And we are beginning, there's PRs in with initial content sections as we're putting those in. And so if you're curious about the progress there, then the repo will have the DidCom messaging repo and GitHub will include or will have that information you can take a look at. Other calls that have happened recently that we want to highlight. Okay, I think these are notes from previous ones. Let's move on to work updates. And we just did a quite thorough review of the Ares Share. Appreciate that, Richard. Ares Cloud into Python, BCGov. Steven, you're muted, and if you're curious.
I had just moved my Windows around. Sorry. we're about to do 043. 042 was released. For those using ACOPI in combination with StreetCred, we did that long-awaited update that had broke basically both and combined both back together last week. So that brings both of them in line with, or the deployments in line with libvcx and I believe it was RFC 094. So that's been done. 043 is in the works. There's a TAA update that will be useful for people who are on the Sovereign BuildNet. Ledger only mode, we're working on the Swagger demo and the first completion of the first step of the DID to HTTP message type transition, which I will use as a springboard to mention that everyone who is implementing and deploying agents should be doing that one. And so just a plug to A, make sure you're doing that change, and B, make sure you announce that change in the RFC for that one.
And they ask that change with a PR to the RFC, correct?
Exactly. Yes, a PR to the RFC to say, hey, yeah, we're done. Right now, Pico Labs is the only one. Once 043 is out, we'll do the same. Richard, is libvcx doing that one? Has it done it?
Sorry, you caught me while I was looking at something else. Which one?
Updating, doing the first step of the community update process for transitioning message types from DIDs to HTTP?
We discussed it. I believe the first step, the short answer is I don't know. I think we did, okay. I think the first step works. We don't reject things that are unexpected, but we are not.
Right, and that's all we need is the first step.
Yeah.
If If you could, please do a PR against the RFC to say that you've done that. Right now, Pico Labs is the only one that has said they have done that first step. That's it from us.
Awesome. Cool. Framework Go, Troy.
Yeah, we're just preparing for the next release. Some of the notes are in the link that I posted. The highlights being a common JavaScript API across WebAssembly and REST, WebAssembly being published to NPM, and a bunch of other interesting things.
Excellent. Thank you for including the release notes there. Jack is not here, but has updated. This is new information, added some parameterization Genesis block for working with Rails. So progress there. And then from the toolbox, we have, I haven't updated the text here, but we are working on some protocol cleanup for managing invitations, as well as some integration with to help agents with transaction author agreements. That's something that that we're adding. And there's some other UI tweaks as it relates to you actually get a notification if a problem report is received, which is really convenient. And then you can go look at the full details of it. That comes up as a pop-up notification and a couple of other things as well. So we'll have that out. And one of the things we've done there is we've provided an example of how to link, and I can show this more in a future time, but how to demonstrate documentation for a protocol and have the root URI be something like in a GitHub repository for some of the protocols that we've gotten there. We have one done already, and the next one will be done shortly that I'm working on for invitation management. So that's a movement on the toolbox there. Other work progress updates from any other projects?
Hi, this is Mushmi. On the Aries SDK Java, we just merged a new transaction. A PR was raised by Shukalpo for web module. This is just getting started. We're planning to add more conversations and messages on it. Similar to, it's more like a library that will call the core Aries code.
Perfect. Good to hear. Other updates? Awesome. Okay, thank you everyone for all of the work and sharing updates with us. That's really encouraging. We have a more minor version of the issue game today, and I'll start out with number 407. We've picked up, this was originally posted by Steven and talking about handling minor version of protocols. There was some discussion, and it ends with this message by Steven. This was followed some conversation about protocols and major minor versions. Comments on this. Steven, do you have anything in particular?
I've got to remember it. Right. Yeah, I think so the idea here was to make sure that we were covering how implementations handle minor versions of protocols. So it's outlined there. Daniel pointed out in his follow-up, the second message on it, where these are mostly covered in all of them. So I think we're mostly there and most of them are evidently understood. I didn't know about whether they were understood or not. I'm not convinced. I don't know whether ACCIFY is actually following all of these. So that's why I wanted to make these called out and that, and then make sure so that the community agreed and then that our implementation followed it. So we'll be putting it into a issue for ACCIFY at least to make sure it is following that.
Given that most of the stuff is covered, should we Is there further action needed on this, or can we just close it having the learning occurred?
I think we can close it.
Okay. I'll go ahead and add a note and comment here at the bottom. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is we have a number of old ones that are open on purpose, and I am among these here. This is not me calling everyone else out for not getting stuff done. But there's a handful of things in progress. And so these that have been assigned, I'd encourage you to take a look at the ones you're working on and make some progress on those and update the RFC when necessary. I did a review of these, and they're all pretty much waiting for work to happen. So there's not necessarily further discussion needed. So when you're sitting around with absolutely nothing to do, as is on a typical day, and you're looking for something that might be fun, I'm kidding. We're all really busy. But encourage you to take some time to do what you can to resolve these. If it's underway, you don't need to do anything. If there has been progress made that you can include on a note, then that would be useful. And then as soon as it's done, you don't have to wait for us to close them. You can decide that that it's complete if you feel like it is, and go ahead and close it after the work has been captured or the changes have been made as necessary. And then all the other ones are quite new. There's discussions in the last couple of weeks, and so we have comments on all of them. Please do be involved, and that will help the discussion move along, outside of the calls and in an asynchronous manner, which is really helpful. Any other comments on the issue game? I feel like since we started doing this, we've made a massive amount of progress, and I'm really, really grateful for everyone's involvement. Steven.
407, can you instead assign it to me and just put a comment that says that I'm going to check that it is sufficiently covered in all of the various places?
Okay.
I think it would be worth checking that out and adding anything to the RFC that might be appropriate. Clarification.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Okay. Anything else? I also went to go look at RFCs, and all the RFCs are—they're not hung. They've either been merged or there's ongoing conversations within the last day or two. And so with the side effect of me pinging people just to look and see if there's an update, there's no work to be done there. And I feel like we've made a lot of forward progress in the community. So I don't feel bad that we don't have a bunch of issues or PRs to look at in the can we close this game. But forward progress is good. So if you happen to have some stuff that's waiting, then we do appreciate your efforts in helping us to move those along. Any other comments before I move on with our agenda today? Okay, we have two pretty cool topics to talk about today. Peng from Medici Ventures will be giving us a demonstration and some conversation around revocation in ACAPI, credential revocation, which is really great. And then Stephen Curran is going to talk about the out-of-band protocol, we'll proceed in that direction. Peng, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Stephen, you have your hand up. Is that on purpose? Now it's down, so it must not have been. Okay, let me stop sharing, Peng, and so that you can.
All right.
Share whatever you'd like.
Share my desktop. Okay. I want to start my demo with just talk about super simplified version of how the verification works in the AnandCred 1.0. It's just gonna be very high level, super simplified, and I'm also pretty new to this. So if I got anything wrong, just stop me. Just feel free to correct me. And then I will talk about what I'm gonna do in the demo. Just so you know what's going on in the demo, and then I'll dive into the demo itself. Okay. To support the vacation, I believe that the issuer has to set it up before you issue any credential. So the issuer, after it's published the credential definition, it has to also publish a revocation registry, which would have the accumulator value in it, and also There's another one that's called revocation entry, which would have a delta, and also the registry itself would have a URI to the tail file itself. The tail files is something that the issuer is supposed to upload or put at somewhere where the holder and the order verifier can get access to, so that they can download the tail files and start doing proof and verifications. So that's we have thought this before the issuer issue credentials. And when the issuer wants to send the credentials, it should include in the credential that the revocation registry ID and the index in the registration. When the approver got that, you get the revocation registry information from the ledger, which will give it the tails files hash and also the URI. So the approver could go download the tail file and get ready to prove itself. Now, when presenting proof, a verifier come in and ask the approver send a proof request to approver. And within that proof request, it should include a non-revoke timestamp, which is a non-revoke field inside a proof request that has a from and to timestamps, which are the seconds after Unix approach. And that's just saying, prove yourself and also prove that the credential you are using has not been revoked during this time. And the prover get upon getting that, update the revocation delta from the ledger, and then generate a proof along with all the math and stuff. I'm not going to get into. We include a new t value in the proof and send it back to the verifier. So because the verifier might not know about the revocation registry yet until this point, so it's going to have to download that delta from the update the delta, download the tail files, and then calculate the t value and try to match it again. So at this point, if you match, that means the credential that prover used to create that proof has not been revoked. So this non-revoke field could be put in the request attribute or be part of the request predicate. Okay, and in the case of revocation, the issuer would update a new delta into the ledger, into the basically what it does is create a new revocation registry entry on the ledger that has a delta value, which will update the accumulator value. So once it does that, during the revocation process, approver will get the new delta, calculate a new value, but the approver doesn't know that, this new delta is because its own credential has been revoked, because it could be other credential being revoked. The approver doesn't know that. He will still use that to create a proof and verify, update the delta, we calculate the t value, and you realize the credential has been revoked. So that proof is not a valid proof anymore. So that's the whole process. So we can see that it is involved with, you have to update delta, you have to download tail files, all that. So for the demo, I'm going to show you, it's going to be, as I implement this revocation in the agent, I also updated the Faber Alice demo in the same ACAPI repository. Right now, the Faber Alice would support revocation, and now we have options to revoke a credential and add a new registry. So basically, if you don't remember what the demo is about, the Faber is a university that will issue a degree or edge and other information as a credential to Alice. And Fever also later could act as a verifier and ask the Alice for proof. I also changed the demo that the demo call used to, the Alice used to always send, it always use the first credential that it found. Now I make it so you always use the latest credential to make a proof. And I did that by putting a timestamp in the, adding a timestamp into the credential definition. So this is a demo level application controller level feature that I could do. It's not part of the protocol or anything like that. So I want to show that the Fever would revoke the credential and detect that Alice proof is false now. And also detect that the revocation registry is false, and we need to add a new revocation registry, and we will be able to issue credentials again. Okay? Started a local ledger locally, and then started a Fever demo code. Because you know it takes a, for some reason it takes a while sometimes for the ledger to show me the location registry definition. So I started the Fever here, and it goes through the regular steps of creating schema, credential definitions, and now this is a new step that I just do, create and publish the location registry onto the ledger. And I make the size of the location registry to be 2, just so it's easier to do the demo. And give me the registration ID, the tail file URL, and in this demo, I make it so, because I add a REST endpoint in the agent itself so that the controller could download the tail file from the agent. In the real application, the controller is supposed to upload the tail file somewhere else and then update the, and then tell the agent where it is so that it could update, or not update, so that it could have the real public URL to the tails file before we publish the revocation registry. But now for the demo, I kind of cheated and put the public URL to the agent's REST API directory, and it works okay. It works great for the demo purpose. So that means Alice later is going to download directly from the Fabrics agent. So got that, and then we publish the registry, publish the entry, and all that. So show the ledger now. So now in the ledger, let me reroll again. The ledger, now we have one revocation registry. Okay, and you would have the credential definition ID pointing to the credential definition. I can show you a little bit later. And there's a tails file hash, tail file location. This would be the endpoint of the agent. And got a new, got an accumulator value. And upon creating one, we also publish an entry onto a ledger. And the entry would reference to the revocation registry ID and the delta. I'm not sure why we need this entry upfront. Okay. Now, I have Fever, it's published revocation registry. I'm ready to issue credentials. And I should have the Alice also running. Let's hold it here. I started up, just started up the Alice and its agent. And also in another window, in this window later, I'm going to log into the Alice Docker container to show you that it has downloaded. Actually, let me just do it now. I did it wrong, sorry. Now code CIT. And that is in bash. Okay, I'm inside Alex Docker container. And right now on the temp, there's nothing but the Genesis transactions file. So I'll come back to this window a bit later. Right now, let's connect Faber with Alice. So let me copy the invitation. This is all part of the original demo. Copy the invitation and pass that into Alice. So now they are connected, and I'm going to just do things in Faber. Probably this part is not that important. So now we are connected, and I'm going to issue a credential to us, right? And Alice apparently got that and like it, so it stored the credential locally. And now if we go back to the container, we have inside the, we have a tail file now. So I made a decision that when the agent receives a credential, if the tails file is not there locally already, it would automatically download the tails file. That's can be changing later. I'm not sure what's the better way, because you don't really, the holder doesn't really need a tail file until it needs to make a proof. But I think that just, you know, because it's just received a proof request, you can probably assume that, you could probably assume that there's internet connection for the agent, so you could download there. But either way, in the code, that whenever it needs the tail file, and if the tail file is not there, you would, the agent would just download it again. And also this path to the tails file is configurable, so you can change it to other path. So now we have, Faber has sent the Alice credential, right? And let's ask Alice to prove itself. And because we haven't revoked that credential, so the proof is true. I used to be confused by this state. That just means we have gone through verification process, and now we found that the proof that Alice sent is valid. Okay, now it's the fun part. Let's revoke that credential. And to revoke credential, we have to use the credential transaction ID, exchange ID, because that's the only thing that's in the issuer that can reference to a credential. Let's do that here. Now it's supposed to send a new revocation entry onto the ledger. Let's reload this. Now there are two records in the entry. Okay. There's different accumulator value now. But it's the same, it should be the same revocation registry ID. Okay. Go back to Faber again. Now, what I want to do is I want to issue another credential again. A new credential. And remember that I said I changed the Alice, so you always use the latest credential to make proof. So if I ask for proof again, should give me the real proof. Okay. Oh, I just realized I didn't ask for proof after I revoked it, but that's fine. I have sizes too, so I could still show you that. I revoke credential here. Revoke with credential exchange ID here. Okay. And proof request. Now, it went through the proof verification process and now proof is false. Okay. And if you go back to the ledger, should have three entries now. Okay. So there is an opportunity for optimization because right now, every time I revoke, every time the agent being asked to revoke a credential, it just publish that a new entry with a new delta. And there's an opportunity for optimization where you can merge, you can batch process revocation and just merge all the delta and publish it once. But I did not do that here. It should be pretty easy, just add a new endpoint that could take several credential exchange ID, I think. Okay, now remember we created the revocation registry with size of 2, right? So, and we have issued 2 credentials at this point. So the revocation registry should be 4 now. And I'm gonna show you that if I try to issue another one, it should fail. So what's going to happen is when you use the endpoint on the agent to ask it to issue a new credential, it's going to reject it with the 400 code, and the message is going to say no, the regression registry is full. Okay, what do we do now? It could publish a new revocation registry that refers to the same credential definition, and that's what number 5 is going to do. So it's going to show you a new revocation registry ID, a new tail files URL that you can download from the same agent. And if you look at the revocation registry definition now, there are 2 records. Okay, and it obviously we have 2 different ID, but they are going to reference to the same credential definition ID. Credential definition ID here will be the same. Okay, and if we now issue a green credential, can issue a green credential and ask for proof, and now the proof is true again, because it's using a new credential and it's of a new revocation registry. That credential has not been revoked yet. And we could, let's revoke that too. Okay, and then as for the proof, and the proof is false again. Yeah, I'm going to issue a new one. I can do this all day, but you know, it's kind of fun to see it being revoked, and you can issue a new one, and it just like it's true again. Okay, and because now we have 2 revocation registry, right? That means we should have 2 tails file, and because Alice has been issued credentials of 2 revocation registry, it would know to download both the tail file. It would know that it needs 2 tail files and download. So that right now the tail file, there are 2 tail files. So I want to mention the file name here. I originally used the revocation registry's ID as the file name. I realized there are a lot of different special characters in there. And also maybe if we had different accumulated numbers or different like, different revocation registry type, that might have, you know, kind of weird special character that's not compatible with the file system. So I decided to hash the whole revocation registry ID. Just do a SHA-256 hash and use that as the file name so that it's still unique and we don't have that weird special character in there. So anyway, that's my demo, and all the change code has been merged into Andrew White Hat's branch, and I made a super simple and ugly document in the code repository to kind of outline the steps that you need to do to do this whole process, and all the REST endpoint and agent that you had to call and the body. Okay, so if you need to do that, you at least have somewhere you can start. All right, is there any question?
First, that was amazing. Awesome stuff. We are delighted, and it's just in time. We're going to start using it almost immediately. So this is really, really awesome. And that was a great demo. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy that I get to do this. It's been fun. I learned a lot about the Aries and LibIn during the process. I'm really happy that I get to help and contribute to this. And that's all.
Thank you for that demo. That was really fantastic. Again, to echo what Steve said, this is really great stuff. And having that in such a nice demo form is a fantastic way to show really how it's done. And I loved it when you said I could do this all day, because that's the idea, right? Is that systems are designed to just work and do it all day if they need to. So yeah. That was excellent.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Peng, for that demo and the work behind it. Next up on the agenda is talking about the out of band stuff. Steven, are you ready to do that?
Sure. Glad to. So I put together a short slideshow. So I'll share my screen, I guess, the easiest in case I pop into different things. So give me a second. Oops. Oh, which screen am I sharing? What can you see?
We see dogs.
Yes, cute puppies.
Okay. That's what I thought. That's Andy. And Lord Byron is the husky. Okay, out of band. It's weird. It moved my presentation that was sitting right there off the screen as soon as I selected it. Okay. Taking the invitation out of connecting. This is the out of band protocol. We've talked about it a couple of times at these working group meetings. We did a little bit of work in a HackMD, and then met with George from SecureKey and Sam from Sovereign, and sort of hashed through it all. And so I've come up with, hopefully, this covers what we all agreed to or thought as a first draft. I did it as a HackMD first. I got kind of panicky because I heard that Evernim has done a libvcx version of the reuse, so I really wanted to get it out fast. So that's why I put the post about the HackMD. I should have it as a PR. I've got it most of the way through being a PR, so I'm just cleaning up the text and things. So current state is we have the 160, and I don't know why I don't have the 023 did exchange protocol linked, but it should be. They both have a pretty similar flow of a way to exchange pairwise did. So you've got an invitation process that is plain text and out of band. The inviter sends the invitee a service block for the response. The two have no DIDCOM method, no secure channel to exchange messages, hence why we're using the plain text. Often it's a QR code. After that, the request that comes next can use the service block from the invitation, so that can be DIDCOM. And it's used for the invitee to give its DID doc that it will use from then on with the inviter. And the inviter can then send the response to the invitee with their DID doc, and they would use the service block from the DID doc that was given by the invitee. So sort of change them together. So you go from a insecure channel to a secure channel to a insecure two-way channel. I will point out that there is no ACK at the end of this process, and that's causing no end of grief in our lives, and hopefully we can fix that. It's a pain. That's one out of band flow. We do have a second one, and this has been implemented in, for instance, the verifiable credential authentication with OIDC, with OpenID Connect. Repo, so it's a service decorator with a combined with a presentation request from the O37 protocol. So you get a challenge that is in plain text out of band, verifier to holder with a service decorator for the response, and the presentation is the response DIDCOM message where the holder sends to the verifier the proof, the presentation, using the information in the service decorator. So that's the second. Both of these are often done when involving, say, a enterprise agent and a mobile agent as a QR code. So that's the common. So that's where we are. The problems. Currently, there's no way to reuse a connection. So if you go to a website, scan a QR code and connect, and then you go back to that website, scan a QR and connect, you get a second connection, which kind of sucks. You want to have a way that as a responder, as someone who scans that QR code, that you can respond on a connection that you already have with that website. So we want to enable that. It's kind of difficult to deprecate connection protocols with this because the inviter has to send a single invitation out to the invitee. They pick one of them, like the connection one or the data exchange one, and that's the one they use. We'd like to allow flexibility for that. And then the third, not necessarily required, but we think it's a good idea, which is to consolidate the out-of-band messages and the QR code handling into a single protocol. Not necessary, but it's satisfying to do that. So that's kind of what we're doing. So proposal is the out-of-band protocol. For now, this is a HackMD document that has the details. It's in RFC format, and as I say, I hope to have a PR very shortly. So a quick overview of it. There are two message types. One is called an invitation. One is called a request. You would only ever, in a single instance of the protocol, you would only ever use one of them. And as I say, there is only one message that is sent out as part of this protocol. The response is always a DIDCOM message from some other protocol. It's never an out-of-band protocol response. Again, very analogous to the invitations and ephemeral challenge we have today. We've just modified the structure to enable the flexibility and the capabilities that we talked about. As with invitation, can be single use or multi-use. So you could have a specific presentation request for a specific user that you're talking to, or you could have on a public web page, a QR code that could be used by anyone. And you would figure out the context of it based on how they respond to it. As I mentioned, any response is a different protocol. And we did include the QR code specs, which were in the connections and did exchange RFCs, but we did add reference to a URL shortener and a proposal for how that would be done. So I'll get to that later. So all I'll do is show the messages. So basically the first is the invitation. Couple of things to highlight. So the message type is out of band. We would use the version 1.0 in this case, and then the message type is invitation. The ID is generated as normal, probably a GUID, but the key in always with a out of band message is that the response would use this ID as the parent thread. So most protocols, when you send the first message out, the second one comes back with the thread ID as the ID of the original message. In this case, it's the parent thread ID. And the reason for that is because that is how multi-use invitations or messages, multi-use out-of-band messages will be aligned back with the original original message. So that allows you to have, you know, 1,000 people respond. They would always use this as the parent thread, saying this is where I got the invitation, but the response would have its own ID and then and therefore thread ID. Next key one is the protocol. So this is allowing flexibility on how the agent would respond. In an invitation, we would expect the response to be for a protocol that supports connecting. But remember that we could have connections 2.0 or did exchange 2.0 as options here. So this gives us flexibility into the future, as well as a way to transition from connections that we have today to did exchange that we'll have in the future. The order of the protocols is the order of preference of the sender. The roles in this is sender and receiver. So the sender is saying, hey, I would prefer you to use did exchange, but if you can't do that, use connections.
Missing a comma.
Oh. Uh-oh. Andrew just pointed out I'm missing a comma. Where? Here? Oh, you're right. Here. I'm missing a comma. Shoot. Okay, the last one is the service block, and I will talk about that a little later. In this case, instead of an inline like the service decorator, we're actually just using a public did as the service block for this invitation. Questions, comments? Okay. The next one is the request out of band message. Again, you would not in a single instance use both of these, one or the other. In this is basically the equivalent of the ephemeral challenge. Again, we've got the parent ID is the expected use of the ID in the response. The request attachment, instead of putting the request in line as it had been in, instead of putting the service request in line with the message, we're saying this is an out of band message and we're putting an attachment in and putting the actual request that is being asked of the other agent as Base64 as part of the attachment. So we get all the goodness of the attachment capability. So we don't limit it as to which protocols could be used for that. You could use all sorts of them. In theory, I guess you could actually have an array of them. You could have multiple of them. You could sign them. You could have this as being, because attachments support links to get the data elsewhere, so you could actually have this in a file, so the presentation request could be in a file somewhere with a URL, and this would be an option for this would be a URL. So all the goodness you get with attachment comes with this approach. And then finally, we've got the service decorator down below here. Again, so same style. This is the idea of the service decorator. So basically, the service decorator the service item within the message is an array. You can have multiple entries in here. So the idea of it is it mimics the service block within a DID doc. So you can have an inline one. You could have just a reference to a public DID. So either approach. I did put that DID key would be used in the recipient keys, which is in line with the way we've been working lately. So the expectation is, you know, in this case, we interpret recipient keys and routing keys in exactly the same way as we do any other DIDCOM message. So this would imply that we don't have any mediators in between. So you're just going to wrap the response or encrypt the response for this DID key and send it along to this endpoint, and that would be directly received by the requesting agent. The service block processing rules, as mentioned, we now have multiple places we could respond to. So how do we decide which one we would respond to? Basically, use only the entries where the type is equal to DIDCOM. So back here, this one is type of DIDCOM. You would have to resolve this, get the service block out of here, and then figure out what you have. And so you could have multiple entries as a result of the need to resolve that. Entries without a type are assumed to be DIDCOM. So if we left off the type in here, we would assume it's a DIDCOM one. The sender must put the array into the order of preference, and then the receiver should prefer the entries in order. So that's, again, that idea of the sender says, oh, I'd like you to use this one, but if you can't use this one, use this one. But it, as always, is up to the receiver to do what they want to do. In general, they should prefer the entries in order. This would allow, this would allow things like, oh, I don't support the HTTP end type, but this one's got a WebSocket end type, so I can use that instead because I want to. I pulled this out of the existing DID exchange and connection. The service endpoint inline could be a DID in itself. So basically, this could be a DID. And so you've got rules around how that would be handled. Basically, the DID would have to have a resolvable endpoint, like an HTTP endpoint, in its DID doc, and a routing key that you could use as to add and extend this array. That's all covered in the existing, so I'm not changing anything there. We're not proposing any changes there. Reuse the connection. Where we got to with this is that if the service item has a public DID in it, the receiver can look for additional connections it has made from an invitation with that same public DID. And if they find it, the receiver could use their own connection, the existing connection, to respond. So they would respond with the, let's see, what have I got? The out of band message, and either of them. So you can use this with the invitation or the request out of band message types. So either of them. The ID is the parent ID of the response in the thread decorator, so that the sender, the person who originally posted the QR code, for example, would be able to tell, oh, even though this connection came in on something entirely different than a new connection, I can relate it back to the invitation that it is in response to. And so the sender would have the context after receiving the response of what to do with the message. It does bring out a possibility that somebody could do a fake QR code, because the receiver probably is not going to verify the public DID and get them to prove control of it. So in theory, they could put somebody else's public DID into a QR code that they make. But the worst case is that the connection gets, you know, the existing connection gets an unidentified request with an unidentified parent ID, and I don't think it's a security problem. So others might want to think about that, but that's a possibility, but it doesn't seem to be a very significant issue. It would be nice to remove this constraint that this service item has to be based on a public DID, so that if you are trying to establish a, for instance, peer-to-peer, mobile-to-mobile connection, it'd be nice to be able to recognize that this connection already exists and you're sending messages, you want to use the same connection. Now, if you're peer-to-peer and sending mobile, you can probably look down at your phone and say, hey, that's Andrew there I'm talking to, and just use your existing connection to Andrew to send a message. So may not be crucial, but anyway, it would be nice to, I think, to remove this constraint, but we didn't come up with a way to do that. We didn't spend a lot of time on it, but we didn't come up with a way to eliminate that constraint. People still there?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Obviously, in doing this, there's updates to the DID exchange protocol and possibly the connections ones. Obviously, remove the invitation message and the all the related material, and obviously point to the out-of-band protocol as handling that part of it, and then add a continue message. And we think that would be the way to indicate reuse, so that if I get a out-of-band invitation and I respond on an existing connection with a continue message, that would allow the sender, the person who posted the QR code or, you know, the out-of-band message, to know, oh yeah, it's related to this this QR code that I posted. So they would know why that message was coming in on that connection. And of course, I would really, really like to add an ACK after both the continue and the response to verify on both sides that the connection was active.
Stephen, I wouldn't dare proposing anything to be DID exchange without having an ACK on there. Otherwise, my house is going to get egged. But I should mention too, it's unlikely that we're going to substantially change the connections protocol. We'll just allow you to jump into the middle of the protocol with the information from the out-of-band message. DID exchange, we can officially acknowledge we'll remove the invitation from the DID exchange protocol. But connections we're likely just going to leave alone, but allow you to sort of jumpstart into the middle of it. There's nothing wrong with that, and it allows us to leave that RFC alone.
Okay.
Just for people that have already built stuff and don't want it to die all of a sudden.
Okay. QR code basically has, for the largest part, the same rules and guidance as outlined in connections and DID exchange. Both of those had the same guidance. So basically, you're creating a URL with an example.com/SSI? A query parameter C_I, and then base64 URL of the invitation. So the stuff we've seen a lot, it would be converted to a QR code often, and hopefully that would not be too dense. The idea of this style, and it's probably the HTTPS here, but anyway, that if you don't have a mobile wallet, the intention is that example.com would see that, oh, you're trying to get to the SSI page. It would post a web page with instructions on getting to the wallet. So that something like that would happen. We have implemented a URL shortener in the VC Authn OIDC, and I put this into the proposal to do the same thing. For that, it basically, instead of putting the full base64 URL, it puts a GUID. It keeps a correspondence between the GUID and the base64, the invitation. And then if obviously the same server is going to respond to this, it's going to look at this and say, oh, that's a GUID. it would send it back, sorry, and the agent would then query for this, would actually do a get on this and get back the full invitation. And so that's how that would resolve. You wind up with the full value. The current HackMD may not say that because I just clarified with Tobias exactly how that worked. I didn't quite understand what was happening under the covers. But that's the proposal of how to do that. So this obviously will always be a very small QR code, which is really nice, gets us away from these being quite large, because these can get quite large, particularly on the request one, where you're actually embedding a full presentation request in it. Any thoughts on that from anyone who's thought about this?
I have a thought, but I don't want to derail the current conversation about the out-of-band protocol. There's been, let me just say it and then we can defer the conversation. There's a bunch of downsides of using URL shorteners, but they're sort of a logical necessity because of the scan resolution of phones in various lighting conditions. One of the proposed solutions is to use fountain codes, or you take the process, you have something that generates a too dense of a QR code. So what you do instead is you do some magic and you break it up into, like, let's say four different QR codes, and you make an animated GIF that replays them over and over, and embedded in it is the right information so that you know when you've received everything that's part of the QR code, and then you can assemble a much larger thing. You could even give the person like a read progress bar so that they can make that happen. And that way you can use much lower density QR codes in order to make this happen. That doesn't mean that we can't do URL shorteners, but it does mean that if you're trying to pass more dense things in an offline manner, we gain some abilities that we don't have. So we can have that discussion at a different time, but I wanted to bring this up as a potential really good option for the length limitations of, you know, practically scannable QR codes.
Yeah, I mean, the downside of that is it would be nice if you could use, well, yeah, I mean, it depends. It'd be nice if you could just use the scanner that's in, you know, use your camera as the way to scan it and then have it redirect to the app. But then using HTTP wouldn't work for that anyway. You have to use the one that's built into your agent. So, and if you have to use the one that's built into your agent, then I guess it would be reasonable to say, let's use some of these advanced QR code handling mechanisms.
Well, in the frame rate on these things can be quite high. So it's not like you're standing there for 10 minutes. No.
Yeah, I've read about a few of them that, or at least one technique that I've seen that was really pretty impressive. It was, you know, on the, you know, milliseconds to be able to read the thing or whatever animation it was using. It's pretty cool.
Right. Okay. But let's not derail from the rest of the discussion, since that's only a small part of it.
Other things that I had, adopts problem report, but there's very limited scenarios where you can use problem report. The only one that I came up with was if you're getting, you've displayed a single use message, but you get multiple response to it, and the sender has given you a DIDCOM channel to which you can respond, and the sender wants to send out a problem report. So it is kind of limited, but anyway, I did propose adopting problem report for those cases. Community rollout, I think we will need to think about that. Supporting both the connection protocol invitation and the out-of-band invitation. I don't quite remember what I mentioned that, but anyway, we'll have to figure out how to support both the service decorator challenge and the out of band, and then drop support for the two other techniques for doing invitations and challenges. This gets to one of the questions Sam asked on this. So we definitely want to update the DID exchange. So question number one is, should I do that as part of this PR or as a subsequent PR? My leaning is a subsequent, but wondered what people thought.
I vote subsequent. Other opinions?
Go framework start using. So second question is update did exchange to 2.0 or leave it as 1.0. This is more for the Go and I think IBM has implemented did exchange. What do you guys think of whether it should be 2 or 1?
It's okay to be 1.
It's okay to leave it as 1?
Yeah. Assuming we're doing these updates in the very near future, then we'll just update.
We really want to get this out so we can both merge onto did exchange, but also get these. The reuse of connections is the biggest thing we need. That's just like urgently needed in the field.
Yeah, we're cool with 1. So.
Okay. And then the last one, Sam said no way. I'm not quite convinced of that, but. Happy to talk about it.
So the invitation step that this replaces is an optional step, meaning it can happen some other way by simply knowing the QR code, for example, and constructing your own or using the same information. And so I don't think it's really out of, I don't think it's a foul ball, if you will, to propose dropping in, with omitting an optional first step. So I don't think
it's... Yeah, but then there's the... But in order to be useful, it requires adding the continue message. Here's actually the bigger question, Sam. Where are we on finalizing did exchange?
Well,
I still don't quite understand what's needed. So
most of it is actually wrapped up into this. Most of the needed changes are wrapped up into this particular RFC, which means once it exists, then the necessary rewrite of did exchange to point to this for all the needed pieces and clarify the remaining ones can happen. So we're pretty close. The one remaining issue is the details around how to sign an attachment, which never we talked about and it never got written. So
that's the attachment protocol.
Well, that's as part of attachments. We discussed that signing attachments is a much better way of passing did docs, and I completely agree.
Yeah.
But we didn't ever, there's not any writing about the specifics about how to sign attachments. So there's two main issues. One of them is inline key representations, which we're solving here. And this also solves the how do I know if they support connections or did exchange. This is also solved in this particular protocol. The remaining issue is how to sign attachments. And if we have a volunteer that knows about stuff like that, that would be great. And I'm not the person who's likely to produce the most sound thing on signing attachments. So, input from there would be useful. We're going to use a general attachment signing mechanism to pass the original did docs that we need to run back and forth. Anyway, the short answer is we're a heck of a lot closer after the out of band protocol is written.
Okay. Anyone want to volunteer for that?
I'm very happy to help orient. If you know about signing of things and you would like to propose something, I'm very happy to guide you in that process about specifically what needs to happen by someone who knows what they're doing. This is where somebody volunteers with enthusiasm.
Yeah. I'm waiting on that.
He keeps looking at me like I'm going to do it. We do have some notes and comments about how we think it should be done that are in comments on GitHub issues somewhere.
I think we have a volunteer.
Andrew, I'm happy if I can be pointed to resources to take from there as long as they're sufficiently clear and write them up, at least as a first draft.
It's really just combining the signature decorator into the attachment decorator, right?
It is. We just want to make sure we do it in a way that is, so here's another complicated issue. Did exchange is also being written into the DIDCOM messaging spec being worked on over at the diff. However, we don't want to wait for that to be done to move ahead with did exchange here. So given that we're moving on to something there anyway, what we might need to do for signatures is just do the sanest thing possible right now for Data Exchange. So long as everyone in the community is happy with it, and I'm thinking particularly of the key type needs of the secure key team. And as long as that's done, then I don't care that we make the world's bestest, most awesomest solution, because we're already working on sort of the next revision of that in a more broad way over there. So given that we want Data Exchange in this out-of-band protocol, we want to come up with the simplest thing that will work for our community. And then we can continue the discussions on what that turns into. And there might be some deviation from what we decide for reasons that can be explained there. So that's kind of my feeling on it, is that we still need to move forward as a community without waiting. And so we should definitely propose what we've got and then, or the easiest thing that we think we can do. And then we can, does that make sense? And then we can work on the larger thing in a larger scale, but we're not hung up on that particular detail.
Okay. So the to-dos on this is for me to finish this PR. Second, to propose a Data Exchange update. And then for at least a Data Exchange update as it relates to out of band and the connection message and the ACK. And then for Andrew and or Sam to work on signing of attachments, and then whatever Data Exchange impact that is.
Yes.
So that's four different things to be done. Is that right?
Yep.
Cool. Any other thoughts from anyone else on that? Is that the four things?
So the other thing that happened in what you proposed here, Stephen, is that rather than we had initially proposed calling this the invitations protocol to make it more generic, and then it got changed to the out of band protocol, given the similarities between both invitations and doing the ephemeral challenge stuff for the OpenID integration that happened. Any comments from the community generally about that name, about that rename? If you think it's a bad idea, we want to hear it sooner rather than later. Man, is this thing on? Is it just Stephen and I talking?
Well, Andrew's talking too.
Well, that's true.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's all I've got.
Can I call some folks out? Troy, do you have any comments on this?
You're asking about the out of band name?
Yeah. Well, just the whole out of band approach that we're proposing here.
Oh yeah. No, I think having a common out of band protocol is a great idea, so that we can evolve these data exchange or connection protocols as we go.
Thank you. Other comments? And I gotta put out my Nathan timer. Okay. Well, you nailed the first time, Stephen. Perfect. Right
with
to final
me.
Draft.
I mean, we had Sam, George, and Andrew, with me note-taking, had a very good session to figure out this and make it work. So I think it worked really well. The only thing I'm wondering, and I don't see anyone from Evernym here, is that can comment on. Richard did mention, or somebody mentioned the other day, that something had been done in libvcx for reuse or in something. So I haven't heard exactly what that was. That is the other side that I would like to hear about, is how did they do it and how is this going to affect them? But I did send a note. That's why I posted that note on Rocket Chat yesterday, and haven't heard anything back. So hopefully it's going to be all good.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Stephen. I do care what Evernim thinks, but I think Richard may have had to bail at the hour mark. And so unavailable for comment, but if you get this in as an RFC, then we can circulate it. And I think that will help us bubble up stuff asynchronously.
Okay.
We are close to the end of our call. We have room in next week's schedule. Does anyone have a topic they would like to present about or hear about or anything that, so that we can get it in the schedule before we find other material to fill it? Man, tough crowd. Okay. I'm happy being done there. We appreciate you folks coming. And please reach out if you've got stuff that you would like. Again, thanks to Peng for his presentation and Stephen for also talking about the out-of-band protocol work. We will see you on all the normal channels and Rocket Chat. And questions there. Please be involved, look over tickets, help with discussions. We appreciate all the work that you do, and we will see you back here next week.
See you, folks.